3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers, and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your pants.
Good morning, everyone. You're tuned into Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 8:55 a.m. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning, Freya. How are you?
I'm going okay. How are you?
Yeah, it's been okay.
It's we're just rocketing towards the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
My PSA for this week is, please, pedestrians, I implore you, avail yourself of any sensory organ at your disposal to not just walk directly into traffic. I get so concerned for people and I'm like, I can't help you. You have to help yourself. Please, please. Pay attention when you're crossing roads. I assume that I'm also heading to an early grave just from anxiety watching pedestrians. We have a stacked show today, starting up with some speeches from the Rally for Sudan from Sunday, the 9th of November, outside the State Library, where we hear from organizers, community, and those in solidarity on honoring the martyrs, collective ongoing grief, and the challenges and urgent need for mutual aid.
And after that, we'll have an interview with Jorgen from Partway for Palestine, who's a journalist and horticulturalist living in Partway, discussing ongoing efforts to close Pine Gap in response to the genocide in Gaza. And then after that, we'll have Oscar from Footscray Community Response live in studio to discuss an upcoming protest in Footscray calling for the end of state-contracted private security.
After that, we're going to be joined in studio by Sueda, formerly known as Garion, to talk about their latest album, This Is All, which was released last week and has been 6 years in the making. And finally, we'll be joined by Grace Gooley, Senior Solicitor at the Justice and Equity Centre, who's speaking with us about a racial discrimination case that has been launched in the federal court by two young Aboriginal brothers against the New South Wales Police, who have been subjected to over 150 bail compliance checks by the New South Wales Police over a 20-month period. This is super concerning and I think definitely worth watching as we see this carceral crackdown that's happening in the state of Victoria and also in New South Wales. I mean, the adult crime, adult time laws that the Allan government has proposed to roll out in Victoria are seriously concerning, and we know whose communities they're going to target the most. So stay tuned and we will be back with you shortly with the news headlines.
It's the government's job to protect Australia's forests and oceans, but too often, governments put the interests of big corporations ahead of protecting your health, your climate, and your children's future. The Albanese government is about to change Australia's nature law. While this might seem like telling them how to suck eggs, we expect laws that actually protect nature by closing deforestation loopholes and protecting threatened species. It's literally their job. Head to wilderness.org.au/suck eggs to learn more. The Wilderness Society is a 3CR supporter.
These are the news headlines for Thursday, the 13th of November. Hundreds of people gathered at the State Library of Victoria on Sunday, the 9th of November, alongside Sudanese activists and community to honour and demand justice for the martyrs of the ongoing proxy war genocide in Sudan over the last 2 years, including the thousands murdered during the recent fall of the city of El Fasher to RSF control. Protesters called for an end to the war, a boycott of the United Arab Emirates that funds the Rapid Support Forces violence against Sudanese people, and for these parties to be held accountable in the International Criminal Court.
Meanwhile, whistleblowers have spoken out about the corruption and lies that Australia's Nauru deals are built on Just as the Albanese government has started taking people from their homes in midnight rains and covertly deporting them. Recent claims allege overinflated contracts, payments for non-existent services, and even public money spent insuring luxury assets, suggesting systemic corruption. Deportation to Nauru will be a life sentence, leaving people without the healthcare they need to stay alive, and permanently separating them from their families. The Human Rights Law Centre and Transparency International Australia have called for both an end to the Albanese government's ongoing punishment of migrants and refugees, and an investigation into the serious allegation of corruption linked to Australia's offshore detention in Nauru.
Also in news this week, more than 250 staff at Victoria Legal Aid have accused the organisation's leadership of, quote, imposing a culture of silence and fear, end quote, through a ban on employees discussing Gaza at work. The ban on pro-Palestinian, quote, campaigning, end quote, has seen VLA delete staff posts in the agency's internal staff networking service and reprimand employees for wearing clothing and accessories like earrings and tote bags that carry visual representations of Palestine. In response to questions, a VLA representative said the agency, quote, asks staff not to discuss or campaign about the war in open workplace settings or on work systems to ensure they don't cause unintentional harm or distress to colleagues. Victoria Legal Aid has a legal obligation to protect the health and well-being of its staff, which means we must respond when harms or potential harms are identified, end quote, the representative said.
Also in legal news this week, the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service and Youth Law have released media statements yesterday strongly condemning the Victorian government's introduction of inhumane youth legal reforms, which will see tougher sentencing laws, including where children will be sentenced to life in prison. Under the Allan Labor government, children aged 14 to 17 years old found guilty of committing aggravated burglary or aggravated carjacking could be sentenced to life in prison. This sentencing is equivalent to murder. The government also plans to send children who allegedly commit offences to the county court rather than the children's court. This means children will not be seen by magistrates who have a specialisation in child development. Narita White, CEO of the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service, stated yesterday, quote, "Today, as we are signing Victoria's first treaty, at the same time the Premier wants to sign kids' lives away who made a mistake. Shame on this government. Shame on the Premier. And shame on this cabinet for allowing your leader to push this agenda on our kids. Victoria is a cruel and unforgiving state where children cannot make a mistake. Punishing trauma is not the answer." Unquote. Similarly, Youth Law CEO Lee Carney stated yesterday, quote, "The proposed laws represent a dangerous retreat from recent evidence-based progress in youth justice in Victoria. This is an alarming step backwards. The government is proposing treating children as adults, when all the evidence shows that locking children up for longer only increases reoffending and entrenches disadvantage. These laws are being rushed through without consultation with youth justice experts, lawyers, or community organisations who work directly with affected young people. This approach is reactive, not reform." Unquote.
And finally, in headlines, Yarra City councillors reported that at 6 p.m. last night, they received a, quote, last-minute alternative motion to an existing agenda item, which sought to overturn the council's long-standing support for the medically supervised injecting room in North Richmond, with no notice provided to the community. Except that 9 submitters opposed to the medically supervised injecting room had been provided with advance notice, and no supporters of the medically supervised injecting room had been warned that this motion was coming. This was reported by Councillor Sophie Wade in an Instagram post yesterday. In her caption, Councillor Wade wrote, quote, "I moved an amendment to request that those most affected, users, staff and locals, be consulted. This was denied," end quote. Councillors, community members, healthcare workers, and people with lived and living experience of drug use have called on people to email their Yarra City councillors before 10:30 a.m. today, Thursday, the 13th of November. For this recession motion to be considered, 2 additional councillors need to support the motion, as well as the medically supervised injecting room and its life-saving work. These have been the news headlines for Thursday, the 13th of November, and you're listening to 3CR 855 AM.
Hopefully we can protect everything that's worth protecting on country and keep all warmongers out.
Well, I won't back down.
Coogatha elder Aunty Sue Hasseldine is fighting to protect her country from Southern Launch's rocket testing range. Southern Launch's collaborations with international weapons companies such as Thales, as well as the Australian Defence Force, are threatening sacred sites, endangered animals and unique ecosystems. Join West Mallee Protection, letter writing calling on key decision makers to get Southern Launch off Coogatha country. For more information, visit West Mallee Protection on Instagram. West Mallee Protection is a 3CR supporter. And I won't back
down. You're tuned in to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM, and it is 7:11 in the morning. We're now going to hear some speeches from the Rally for Sudan from Sunday the 9th of November outside the State Library of Victoria. In this clip, you're going to hear from organisers, community and those standing in solidarity on honouring the martyrs, the collective ongoing grief of watching this tragedy unfold, and the challenges and urgent need for mutual aid, as well as the history and current counter-revolutionary violence taking place in Sudan. Protesters gathered to state that they will not forget, they will fight for Sudan, they will boycott the UAE, and they will fight alongside Sudanese communities for a free Sudan.
Our next speaker is going to be the African Solidarity Collective, Mateka Ramnak, sorry if I butchered the name, a pan-Africanist, anti-imperialist, political activist and a member of the African Solidarity Collective. Mateka has been deeply involved in building Black and African solidarity, organizing here in NAM. Before we continue, just a reminder that the media tries to portray that our conflicts are different, that our interests are different to those in Palestine, to those suffering all over the world. Remember, we all fight for the same cause, whether it's against the United States funding the destruction of people in Gaza, or whether the UAE backing the RSF, it's all under the one idea that we're resisting the colonization of the peoples. Please welcome Anak Bangsa Amrataka. Please welcome Mateka Ramnak from the African Solidarity Collective. Round of applause.
Thank you for that. At first, I would like to acknowledge that we are meeting on the lands of the Wurundjeri people, the Kulin Nation. And as the brother just said, in order to talk about oppression in the world, in Sudan, in Darfur, we always remember when we are meeting here about the genocide that has happened in this land and that continues to occur to our Aboriginal brothers and sisters. And that is something that we must never forget when we are standing against oppression and genocide. All around the world, there is a scourge of colonialism, of imperialism. The imperial powers, they never left our countries. They never left the African countries. They never left the Asian countries. They changed from a system of direct colonization to what our great leader Kwame Nkrumah called neocolonialism, which is when a government occupies a land by indirect colonization. So instead of them sending foreign armies, they support their puppets and their proxies, as we see in Sudan with the RSF and what the United Arab Emirates is doing. We must always be aware when we see a conflict, we must never fall into the narrative that it is because those people are backwards or barbaric, as they have always tried to portray Africans, as they have always tried to portray the people of the third world, that we are somehow backwards and barbaric, and this is why there is conflict. No! The conflict is caused by outside interests seeking to benefit and exploit the land and the people. Sudan had a revolution that stood up for civilian government, for a bright future, for a new Sudan, for a just society, for the equality of women, for the equality of minorities.
Salam Sudan.
Thank you. Round of applause. So, we must look when we see what is happening in Sudan. What we are seeing is a counter-revolution. We destroy the dreams of the revolution in Sudan. But the dreams cannot die. Even if you kill a people, you cannot kill the ideas. The martyrs did not die for nothing. They died for the bright future. For them, even if they don't see it, those who came after will see it. We must never forget their dreams. Thank you.
I think another round of applause for Nakba Somoza Kon, the African Solidarity Collective, for their inspiring words. What's happening in Sudan is a counter-revolutionary war, an attempt to prevent a civilian government, for Sudanese people to run their country for the Sudanese people. We're going to start again with some more chants. Stop the killing, stop the war. We demand a free Darfur.
Stop the war. We demand a free Darfur.
I know there's more people here, so I should be hearing a little bit louder than last time. Stop the killing, stop the war. We demand a free Darfur.
Stop the killing, stop the war. We demand a free Darfur.
Free the people, free the land. We demand a free Sudan.
Free the people, free the land. We demand a free Sudan.
Free the people, free the land. We demand a free Sudan.
Free the people, free the land. We demand a free Sudan.
Free the people, free the land. We demand a free Sudan.
Free the people, free the land. We demand a free Sudan.
I'm going to invite Mubin over to bring up the last speaker, inshallah.
Let's go, let's thank Farah one more time. I just want to do one more chant, okay? UAE to the ICC, RSF to the ICC. UAE to the ICC, RSF to the ICC. UAE to the ICC, RSF to the ICC. One more, one more, one more. Oil and gold, blood and sand. UAE, you stain our land. Oil and gold, blood and sand. UAE, you stain our land. Oil and gold, blood and sand. UAE, you stain our land. Oil and gold, blood and sand. UAE, you stain our land. Oil and gold, blood and sand. UAE, you stain our land. Oil and gold, blood and sand. UAE, you stain our land. Thank you. Now I'm going to call upon one of our members, Buckley. He's planning on sharing a little voice note. I'll give him to give a description of what the voice note is and what it means. I'll call him up in a second. But if we can get everyone silenced, okay, it is a voice note. And I'll get him to tell you what the voice note is about in a second. I'll get Buckley to come up. Round of applause for Buckley. He's one of our organizers as well.
Assalamu alaikum everyone, thank you. My name is Abu Bakr. Just for context, I've been doing mutual aid work to help communities in Sudan and refugees who are stuck in Cairo for the last 13 months. Last month we raised $10,000, this month we've raised $13,000. It's good, been good, alhamdulillah. And it goes straight to so many families that are relying on it for food. And this is a voice note actually from Sudan, from one of our connects who's helping communities from Darfur. And I'll translate it, but I'll just play it. I just want to see if you can actually hear it, if I put it really close to the mic.
ومشينا للناس دي في أماكنهم والحمد لله سلمناهم وانتوا الفيديوهات هتصلكم والكيس يعني معروف يعني ممكن يقعد يومين للأسرة ثلاثة يوم للأسرة الخفيفة ويومين للأسرة الثقيلة.
So far he's just said thank you so much for Abu Bakr and his friends and my mom for all the provisions that you provided. We've just been distributing these bags of food through the afternoon and into the evening. These bags are good enough to sustain a small family for about 3 nights and a bigger family for about 2 nights.
لكم شكر الله يصور العقل وفوق النسائين كبار عارفات الدين قال إن شاء الله هيدعو لكم في السجود وأنا أزلت أن أدعو لكم في السجود الدعاء بتاع السجود ده في غير ما حاجة عادية لو كان حصلت مصيبة ولا انقطع ولا حاجة تلاقيه شغلانية في الغربة ولا في أي مكان هو ساجد ويدعى وبعدك يختم الدعاء بالصلاة على الحبيب وبعدك يرفع من السجود يدي دي لا يدعى الله دعاء في السجود ختم بالصلاة على الحبيب ده بالحديث و
So what he says there is that these among the people that we've been helping are high religious scholars and sheikhs, and they have been giving us prayers during sujood, just prostration. And he's basically making the point that when someone does dua for you during prostration, it's not like any dua, it's a very special dua, that's when you're closest to God. So these people are thinking about us when they're closest to God, so just know that that connection is there.
يعني يا جماعة الناس نطلع من المساجد طاهرين وضيفين نقيين وشايبين سبعهم في يدهم واخترنا اليوم ده مخصوص بعد الصلاة مباشرة مشينا معي إخوة كرام وسلمنا الناس زين والحمد لله بشكركم جزيل الشكر شكر الله يصور العقل وانتوا شو عايفين في الفيديو هناك كل عسكر كبير العسكر كبير ده لما مشينا لأننا نقفوا جنبه ولا أي حاجة كلهم بيجوا جارين وجبتوني لأن العسكر ده بتاع منظمات والحكومة هي مزلومين منظمات لكن لما جيت اخترت النادي طلعوا من المعسكر ما عرفوا يقعدوا من المعسكر ما في محل فيه مشاكل قاعدة في القطعة الفاضية دي بانين فيها وحالهم يعني يرسى عليه لكن الحمد لله الشغلة بتاعت ابو بكر وزملائه دي جات في مكانه وجات في محلها وكثيرين كثير ناس قاعدين جالسين في بيوتهم انا بعرفهم بعرف ناس انا بعرف ناس والله يعني تانيين حق العلاج ده ما مشكلة المشكلة في الاكل والشراب والكيس بتاعهم حتى دخلنا فيه حتى درجة الصابون أنا دخلت فيه صابون عشان الزول يقدر يغسل الأواني ويغسل ملابسه وكذا يعني تدي الزول حاجة إنه يحس بإنه هي حقيقة يعني مكتملة الأركان في الأشياء دي.
So he's saying that people don't feel safe and they need medicine and they are sometimes scared to go to the mosque on Fridays to go to Friday prayer because it's a heavily militarized space and yet they still go to the Friday prayers and right after the Friday prayers. We gave them this food and they were able to receive this food. People need, you know, there's a lot of people that need medicine, but the most important thing is food and water. So despite this food and water arrived just in time when people really needed it. So he's just extending his gratitude and his prayers. And
you're tuned in to Thursday Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. It is 7:23 in the morning and you just heard some speeches from the Rally for Sudan on Sunday, the 9th of November, outside the State Library of Victoria, where organizers, community, and people standing in solidarity with Sudan spoke about honoring the martyrs, collective ongoing grief, the challenges and urgent need for mutual aid, and the history and current counter-revolutionary violence taking place in Sudan. And we'll have information in our show notes of how to donate to some mutual aid fundraising efforts and also who to follow to get more information. And I'm thinking of folks like Saut al-Sudan and Bakri who've been doing amazing work on this. And if you want to hear an interview with Bakri about the mutual aid organizing efforts that he's been involved in, trying to coordinate internationally to get food relief and urgent supplies on the ground, you can head to 3cr.org.au/Thursday-breakfast and listen to our interview with Bakri from last week.
And now we're going to hear an interview that I had with journalist and horticulturalist Jorgen from Mpatwe for Palestine discussing ongoing efforts to close Pine Gap renewed in response to the genocide in Gaza.
So I'm a part of a group called Mbantwa for Palestine. It's a Palestine solidarity group on Aranda country in Mbantwa, Alice Springs. The group was established, I suppose, early on in the escalating genocide after October 7. There's a few different strands that sort of brought the group together, I guess. Some of us came from, there was some direct action on the road leading into a facility that probably a lot of your listeners are aware of called the Pine Gap, so-called Joint Defense Facility. So some of us sort of became involved with Mbantwa for Palestine after taking direct action on the road leading into that facility, blocking the road. there were also a couple of vigils held very early on that brought a lot of the community from, quite diverse backgrounds together to grieve the rapidly accumulating amount of Palestinians who were being murdered by Israel in Gaza. That the Mbantu for Palestine has continued and I think really, I don't know, sort of consolidated and grown in strength over the last couple of years. And the actions that we've taken over that time have continued to have a focus on the Pine Gap facility. There's now been three blockades of the road leading into the facility. There's also been these fortnightly gatherings on the road leading into the facility that are non-arrestable actions that we have on the side of the road, about 50 metres before the gate to the facility. The Australian Federal Police tend to set up a cordon and won't let us get any closer to that. And then there's been a lot of solidarity work with First Nations communities here, and a lot of, we've had vigils on Nakba Day. Maybe that's roughly an overview. I'm probably missing some of what the group has been up to.
You know, it's a very unique place you find yourself in, because, you know, we're definitely more than complicit in terms of, you know, giving like weapon parts and all that. But it's something like, I think it's 3 of the 4 satellites in Pine Gap are dedicated to the Gaza Strip or something. Like it's a crucial part of this machine.
Yeah, and that has been where we've put a lot of our energy. Groups across this continent have done a really incredible job, I think, blocking weapons manufacturers that supply parts into the F-35 fighter jet supply chain, and underscoring Australia's participation in the genocide in Gaza via weapons, the export of weapons components to Israel. And I think maybe another underreported aspect of Australia's participation in the genocide is the intelligence sharing from the Pine Gap facility here on our new country, just down the road. There's really good documentation that we don't know the details of exactly what kinds of intelligence are being shared, but we know that there are at least 8 intelligence sharing agreements between the US National Signals Directorate, National Security Agency rather, and the Israeli Signals Directorate. And we know that intelligence has been shared from Pine Gap to Israel in the past, in the Yom Kippur War. Those Pine Gap and the Northwest Cape played a really important role for Israel, and that was a war that Australia was ostensibly neutral in. As you said, Pine Gap connects with 4 geostationary satellites that monitor different parts of the globe. 3 of those satellites monitor territory that includes West Asia and Gaza. So certainly those satellites would have had and continue to have a focus on Gaza, and those satellites are capable of intercepting all kinds of communications, not only military communications, but civilian communications like internet signals. I think there's really good reason to believe as well that the many US strikes on Yemen over the last 2 years, the targeting information for those strikes would have come from Pine Gap. The recent strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities, the targeting information for those strikes would have come from Pine Gap. So it's a really core piece of the global US war machine.
Yeah. I don't know how much you know about the history, but has this been sort of like the latest pulse from organizing in the area, because presumably people would have been against Pine Gap since its creation, and this is not the first time the US has been involved in something horrifying, making us complicit. I was wondering if you could talk about the history of the sort of the movement where you are.
So Pine Gap was the agreement to build Pine Gap was signed in 1966 between the US government and the Australian government. I think it's a peppercorn. There's a ridiculous video out there somewhere of a US official handing over a framed peppercorn to his Australian counterparts, because the lease is literally a peppercorn per year. The base was, that agreement was obviously signed with no participation from the Yarrandah traditional owners, no consent and no permission ever given for the construction of the base. The base started operating from 1970. And there has been, really strong Yarrandah resistance to the imposition of the base on their country from the very founding of the base. And then I guess with it being the 50th anniversary of Gough Whitlam's dismissal, I've been hearing an anecdote over the last few days. David Shoebridge was just passing through Alice Springs for a couple of days. He went out to Pine Gap, and he was telling a story about the role that Pine Gap played in that Yom Kippur War, a war between Israel and Egypt and Syria. And basically Israel was on the verge of using its nuclear weapons because it was losing in that war. If Israel had used its nuclear weapons, Russia would have used nuclear weapons in response, and then the US would have used nuclear weapons in response to Russia. So the US global war machine placed its global system of nuclear weapons on high alert, which meant that all of those weapons had to be ready to fire within 15 minutes. And the signal to place those weapons on high alert came from Pine Gap and from Northwest Cape, another intelligence facility in Northwest Western Australia. To defuse that situation, the US chose to give Israel intelligence via Pine Gap about the Egyptian and Syrian army's movements, so that Israel could sort of regain the advantage in that war and not feel that it needed to use its nuclear weapons. And basically that war ended in a stalemate, and the Australian government never found out or didn't find out until a couple of years later. And Gough Whitlam was very upset about that and threatening to not renew the lease on Pine Gap, which was coming up in early 1976. And of course, as we all know, and as we're now sort of commemorating the 50th anniversary of, he was deposed shortly before he could make the decision not to renew the gap, not to renew the lease on the gap. And then I think like resistance to the base really kicked off in a big way throughout the 80s. There's a really great article that your listeners should seek out and read. It's by Bob Boughton and Deborah Dernan. It's called 20 Years of Anti-Imperial Resistance from Central Australia, or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. That really, they were intimately involved with the anti-bases movement in the 80s. And they were both members of the Australian Communist Party and involved in a lot of solidarity work with East Timor and with US bases activists in the Philippines, and also with Kanaki art activists on Kanaki. I think there was a convergence of at least There was a women's peace march in 1983 that was a convergence of at least 400 people. That was really huge, and a lot of those people ended up staying in the town and have left a real sort of lasting imprint on the political fabric of Mbantu Alice Springs. And then there was a really long mobilization. There was this group called the Australian Anti-Bases Campaign Coalition that formed in Alice Springs in 1985 and connected with lots of other sort of anti-war groups across the continent. And they sort of put together a three-year campaign leading up to the renewal of the lease on Pine Gap in 1987. There were 800 or so people and a week-long conference that happened, 213 arrests at the base, like huge wow. numbers of people streaming into the base and getting arrested. They were having picnics on the lawns of the director of the CIA at Pine Gap, on the lawns of his house. and they even got like Northern Territory Labor Party to pass a resolution calling for the lease on the base not to be renewed. So it was really quite a like significant and impactful mobilization.
When does the lease currently stand?
So the lease used to come up for renewal once a decade. Yeah, I believe the last time it came up for renewal was in 1986 or 1987, 88. Right. And there were huge mobilizations over that period. And I guess the Australian and American governments figured having this hugely contentious base up for renewal once a decade just creates an impetus for like a huge community mobilization in response to the renewal of the base.
So is it just indefinite or something?
We should do it. So now it's basically, it just rolls over. Yeah.
Wow.
I think the Australian government, in the event that it ever wanted to terminate the lease, which sort of feels like we're not there at the moment, has to give at least a year's notice.
Right.
But it no longer sort of comes up for renewal the way it used to.
Yeah. I was wondering if there was any upcoming actions or anything you'd like to, you know, mention.
So we've been having these fortnightly rallies out at the road leading into the base. We just had one on Sunday. I don't have a date for the next one, but we'll continue to aim to have them sort of every 2 or 3 weeks. So it'd be great if we can get another two of those rallies in before the end of the year, and things kind of tend to slow down here as the weather gets really hot. We're also working towards a larger convergence on the base next year, possibly in July. There's still kind of a lot that we have to work out, and we don't have a firm date for it, but next
July
year
4th
will be the
6th. Seems appropriate.
Yes. Yes. It seems very appropriate. So yes, that it could well be that is the date that we choose. It's lovely being in Mbantu Alice Springs in the central desert in the middle of winter. The days are beautiful, the nights are quite cold.
I'm sure the stars are beautiful.
Yeah, I would love. Yes, they are. Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful night skies. So I would really encourage your listeners to like keep an ear out. We will,
and if I can, you know, make the time next July to come and assist.
Yeah. That's if we're aiming for sort of a national convergence. So yeah, it would be amazing to have pro-Palestine, anti-war, anti-AUKUS, decolonial activists from across this continent come together on Aranda country to resist US imperialism and Australian sub-imperialism.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today.
No problem. It's been lovely.
That was an interview with journalist and horticulturalist Jorgen from Mpartway for Palestine, discussing ongoing efforts to close Pine Gap, renewed in response to the genocide in Gaza.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings.
cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au. You're listening to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. And we just wanted to share with you information about an upcoming rally against anti-protest laws, which were introduced into Victorian Parliament yesterday. They're going to be discussed in the lower house next week. And Defend Dissent Coalition are organising a rally against these punitive laws outside Parliament House next Tuesday, the 18th of November at 5:30 p.m. So again, Defend Dissent Coalition are organising a rally against the anti-protest laws outside Parliament House next Tuesday, the 18th of November at 5:30 p.m.
Brr. Hi, this is Shirley Hood. You're invited to the 2025 Beyond the Bars CD launch on Thursday, the 20th of November at the Deering Centre next to Collingwood Town Hall. Put it in your diaries. I'll be there as MC for an evening of talks and music, including a panel discussion with some of our deadly broadcasters and music with Mr. Bar Willoughby. Thursday, the 20th of November, the Deering Centre, next to Collingwood Town Hall, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Free CDs, snacks and drinks provided. All welcome. See you there. Brrr.
But I won't be sworn at and I won't be bossed around. That includes them, the big bosses. They won't be bossing me around either. I will find a way.
Rents are through the roof. The cost of living is skyrocketing and public housing is under attack. How do we fight back? Join us on Wednesday, the 26th of November from 6 p.m. at RMIT University's City Campus for From Housing Crisis to Dwelling Justice, a free public event that gets to the heart of the housing struggle. Featuring the premiere of Bay Views for All, a documentary about the fight to save the Barrack Beacon public housing estate, and a panel discussion with public housing residents, activists, and experts, this is one you won't want to miss. Register for a free ticket at events.humanitix.com/crisis-2-justice.
It's never occurred to them they've actually got something valuable here.
Hands off public housing. A 3CR supporter.
Good morning, listeners. You're listening to 3CR 855 AM on Thursday Breakfast. Just want to remind people who missed it in the headlines earlier. Last night at 6 p.m, councillors from the Yarra City Council, who are in support of the medically supervised injecting room, were not told about a last-minute submission to basically remove the support for the medically supervised injecting room. So basically, this is reported on by Councillor Sophie Wade, which we had on the show before. And it's really, really, really important to send an email to the City of Yarra councillors. You can see that on the website. You can just type in their councillors, particularly to the mayor, Stephen Jolly. And yeah, all the councillors, there's a majority right now are looking to overturn their long-standing support for North Richmond, which is pretty disgraceful. It is such an important life-saving measure. So please send your emails before 10:30 a.m. today and tell everybody else too.
That's right. And you can find their email addresses for the councillors by heading to yarracity.vic.gov.au. And Inez, this is such an important motion to get up because you've done so much longstanding coverage on the fight to get a second medically supervised injecting room, but this is rolling back the only one we have.
Yeah, and I think what people don't realise is obviously it's being used as a political football all the time because people don't care about people that use drugs, but what's really important to recognise, it is a long-standing, highly successful like health measure. It manages and reverses opioid overdose, but not just doing that, which is already life-saving. It also provides wraparound support for dental work, counseling, hepatitis C. A lot of the people that use the service don't get support from anywhere else. Like, this is truly life-saving. It will be devastating with the closing of CoHealth as well, like in the area. The city of Yarra really needs to step up and care about, sorry, I'm getting emotional. It's like it's the only people that really need the support in this area.
And I think, you know, we need to think about this in the context, as you said, of the CoHealth closure, but also of things like the rollout of privatized security forces that are moving along people that are sleeping rough. It is a concerted attack on people who are already extremely marginalized, extremely vulnerable, made vulnerable by these security forces and by the withdrawal of vital support services like CoHealth and like the medically supervised injecting room. Folks are basically being pushed out of public life, pushed out of public space, and being told that you don't belong in Melbourne.
Absolutely. And one thing that I want to remind people from is, like, some people that use a service, like, hepatitis C is such a preventable thing to be cured, and to get somebody to an appointment to get the logistics and all this stuff, just by moving the hepatitis C into the North Richmond Centre has allowed people to get life-saving care that they've put off for years. They get dental care that helps them smile for the first time and experience, like, not wanting to hide their smile, talk to people, maybe for the first time get a counselling session to support all the trauma that they've experienced. And this whole thing about, like, oh my God, the safety of people, this is all political theatre. Like, just because people are gathering and maybe you don't like the look of them or what they do does not mean that you're unsafe. You are just uncomfortable.
Yeah. And so, again, make sure that you email your Yarra City councillors before 10:30 a.m. today. And to find out their email addresses, you can head to yarracity.vic.gov.au. We encourage you, please, please send those emails in. It could not be more important to save the medically supervised injecting room and to roll these services out further. It is 7:47 a.m. and you're listening to 3CR 855 a.m.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
Don't have $1 million and still want to have a good education for your kid? Tune into the Dogs program. We are the defenders of government schools. 12 p.m. on Saturdays here on 3CR 855 and the AM dial podcast, streaming live on 3cr.org.au and 3CR digital. We defend government schools because they need it.
I'm now joined by Oscar from Footscray Community Response, live in studio, to discuss an upcoming protest in Footscray calling for the end of state-contracted private security. Hi, Oscar. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. I was wondering if you could just sort of outline the broader context for what's happening in Footscray and the Maribyrnong City Council.
Yeah. So we're having this speak out because in July this year, the Maribyrnong City Council, all the councillors voted to hire private security guards worth up to $100,000. Which is a mouth-watering amount of money to have actually just two private security guards. But this is a trial which will, I think, for the council, lead to a more permanent program, which I think is quite a worrying sign, in particular for a suburb that is very impoverished, very multi-diverse, and should be welcoming of all people. But yeah, this is quite worrying signs.
Hmm. And I guess it's probably worth... what are some better ways that $100,000 could be spent to support the people of Footscray?
Oh, heaps. Basically, there's a long list. Like, you could spend that money on drop-in centres, helping to improve social services around Footscray. put into programs advocating for social housing. Like, the list goes on and on. And I think when we talk to people, because we've been leafleting out at Footscray train station, I've been doing some door knocking for this rally. A lot of people do immediately go to that pricing and saying, well, why on earth is council spending money on private security? We could be doing so much better stuff to improve the community living standards and making Footscray an even better suburb that's welcoming of all residents, basically.
Mm. Well, I mean, because I find it quite shocking that, like, you know, Footscray doesn't even really have public toilets.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, that's not even, that's kind of like a selfish thing. It is for the actual, in terms of the, you know, issues in terms of the increased number of people who have to sleep on the street or whatever, then that's a true livelihood kind of thing. And there's no showers. There's, you know, certain, it's very, very ironic that we're talking about the, injecting room just now, but, that's another thing that was flagged for the Maribyrnong City Council, but then very similarly just completely, you know, sort of shafted by powerful interest. You know, I'm not trying to accuse anybody of anything, but it's very, very similar little things happening.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is a particular sort of interest that's going on at hand, because with the hiring of the private security guards, the Maribyrnong City Council has been putting on this idea that, oh, they've been consulting with all different community groups, but we actually know that's not really true at all. This has been something that's been particularly advocated by the small businesses and traders of Footscray, particularly for them to move on homeless people, move on people who have been inconvenienced, I'll put that in brackets, to their businesses. Where we actually haven't been consulted or talked to at all. Like, we've actually gone out of our way to email, even try to talk to councillors, bring them to our meetings. We have lots of fortnightly meetings on Thursdays, and we've actually invited them to come along to speak to community members, and they haven't. So this idea of consulting all of the community, it's a load of rubbish, basically. Mm-mm. So
yeah. So the way that this is played out is that a little sort of group of, you know, three or four security guards and the local laws officers patrol the Footscray CBD. I was wondering if you had anything to say about any sort of feedback from people in the community as to how this has impacted people directly already.
Yeah, well, so the people who have been dealing with the private security guards and the local laws officers, on the basic level, there's a sort of level of fear and intimidation that people have been dealing with. Because to put things in perspective, these local laws officers and the private security guards have the powers to move on people that are sleeping rough, that seem inconvenient to small businesses. And this is a thing that is constituted in the local laws as well. So that is a very intimidating prospect. And I feel with a lot of the people residing in particular in Nicholson Street Mall, this is the kind of real epicenter of Footscray, and where the local security guards and the local law officers have been just patrolling down. A lot of people, yeah, feel intimidated, have been moved on, which is a very real thing that's going on. And that's working in conjunction with Victoria Police, who have always wanted to, I think, have this aspect of private security. But I've also used this wide phenomenon that's been also happening in Melbourne City Council to Truganina as another place in the western suburbs as a impetus to say, well, we need more cops, basically. We need more cops to do the job that private security are doing. So it creates this really, like, incredibly unhelpful and violent dynamic of more over-policing is needed, basically, to solve all these issues, which... Yeah, as we know, I don't think cops are going to solve homelessness or the cost of living crisis.
Well, yeah, I mean, it'd be lovely, because that's where all the money seems to go. But yeah, we do have, you know, pretty solid evidence that these solutions don't, like, not only don't help, they just make things worse. So I guess that's, it's, you know, I don't want to get too conspiratorial, but that's an interesting angle to think about, the private security as a solution to effectively generate more crime, and then they can justify bringing more cops and more private security, and it's a never-ending kind of crackdown on people, which I guess we are seeing in different councils around the state as well, which is really quite shocking to see. Which leads us to this group's action this Saturday in the Nicholson Street Mall at 11 a.m.
Yeah, so there'll be a banner painting at 10 and then the speak out will happen at 11, which will have a range of speakers talking about this initiative made by council and why we oppose it, but also giving a platform for people who reside in the Nicholson Street Mall to come and speak about their experiences and why they feel like this measure is not addressing the real kind of crises that people are facing. As I mentioned, homelessness, cost of living, you name it. So it's a really great opportunity to put the flag in the ground and say, hey, we're not for this, basically.
Yeah, that's lovely. I think it's sort of about time to sort of take back the mall from this from this decision, because it has been a real looming sort of cloud in the area. I know lots of people whose real entire sort of routine has had to fully change because they've been harassed out of where they sleep and where they, you know, sort of congregate for really no reason at all. Like, truly no reason at all. Mm. And it's a very, I think it's also, it's a very interesting thing because the way that the mall operates is it is like a public space, like public place. Sure, everybody needs to be able to sort of get along, but there wasn't really, you know, that there isn't that much of an issue apart from certain retailers who feel a need to, control the public space that they are really just another member of enjoying. Which also I find quite interesting that in the mall specifically, there's a lot of the local laws are used around like alcohol, sort of. Mm. That's the angle they, you know, use to attack these sort of things. At the same time as being basically doing it on behalf of a bar, which feels like there's this real hypocritical sort of you know, pick and choose of local laws in these spaces, like, and you know, no one is surprised to know that it's disproportionately towards people of color and women and people who are both.
I think that's definitely right. It's really stacked against ordinary people and in particular racially oppressed people in Footscray. We have to keep in mind that, like, this is the despicable decision made by council in the wake of Abdi Fattah Ahmed's murder earlier this year by Victoria Police. So that's what I think is really sharp about this moment, that, like, when Abdi Fattah was murdered, the council response then is to say, let's get some private security guards to come in and patrol Footscray, rather than actually looking at what was Abdi Fattah's situation. He was a Somali refugee. He was homeless, you know, dealing with a lot of different sort of crises in Footscray. Why can't we just solve those sort of issues like homelessness to help people like Abdi Fattah live a fruitful, enjoyable life in Footscray, rather than going, let's over-police Footscray more, basically.
Yeah. I just want to quickly just mention the protest again before we wrap this up. It's Nicholson Street Mall this Saturday, 10 a.m. for banner painting and 11 a.m. for the speak out. It's a family-friendly affair and you can, you know, come in fancy dress. Then we're going to try and organize, you know, live music and all that stuff and have a really nice day of it to sort of show that this mall is for people and that we don't need private security. Thank you so much for joining me today, Oscar. I guess that's the, you know, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Benvenuti, benvenuti al programma Radio File.
Mercoledì pomeriggio dalle 18:30 alle 19:30.
And for those who don't speak Italian, that's Wednesday evening, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m.
You'll hear from multi-generational Italian voices coming together to connect and learn and discuss Italian culture.
And politics.
And politics.
Radio File, building bridges between the diaspora.
The program will be part in Italian, part in English. So
practice your Italian or hone your listening skills.
Radio File, la voce alternativa della comunità italiana a Melbourne.
Tune in to 3CR 855 AM or you can listen online, 3cr.org.au.
Radio File.
Hi.
I'm Jeffrey.
I'm Alphonse.
I'm Erwin.
And we are from the Voice of West Papua.
Tuesday, 6:30 until 7:30 p.m.
News and music from West Papua.
You're tuned into Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. And just a quick recap of what we've covered today in case you are just joining us. First up, we heard some speeches for the rally for Sudan on Sunday, the 9th of November, outside the State Library of Victoria. We then heard an interview with journalist and horticulturalist Jorgen from Mpantwa for Palestine, discussing ongoing efforts to close Pine Gap. And we were just joined by Oscar from Footscray Community Response to talk about an upcoming rally in Footscray calling for the end of state-contracted private security. A little weather check now. It looks like it's going to be sunny skies for most of the day, but a potential shower forecast as well. It is going to be a lot warmer than yesterday. So we've got a low of 12, a high of 24 degrees. So get that sunscreen out. And currently it is sitting at about 15 degrees Celsius in Narm. Stay tuned. We've got plenty more coming up on Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. And remember, to listen back to our past shows, you can always head to 3cr.org.au/Thursday-breakfast.
And I don't believe in fighting today in any one front, but on all fronts. In fact, I'm a black nationalist freedom fighter.
This country is a nation of thieves.
Now, we're never going to get justice here in these filthy racist courts here.
Our people have been massacred, and we're not supposed to grieve for that. We've got to do something more drastic if we're serious about this.
Move over or we going to move on over you.
Yilliman with Kieran Stewart-Asherton on 3CR dives deep into Indigenous resistance and global anti-colonial struggles. Featuring frontline activists, it confronts Australia's identity, challenges power structures, and fuels revolutionary discourse. Wednesdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
The annual Melbourne Pacifica Festival is on again, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday, December the 6th, at the playground end of Banjo Paterson Park in Lynbrook. Immerse yourself in the richness of Pacific Island culture with traditional dance, dynamic drumming, soulful harmonies, bands, guest artists, children's activities including rugby clinics, Pacifica arts and crafts, and yummy food. Lots of fun and activities for the whole family. Saturday, December the 6th in Lynbrook. Visit melbournepacificafestival.org. Melbourne Pacifica Festival is a 3CR supporter.
It's the sale of the century, brought to you by The Sporting Record. It was a great success last year, so we're doing it again. We're bringing all the usual stuff, records, bric-a-brac, 3CR merch, plus we're going to try some new categories, plants, Christmas stuff, and vintage sporting apparel.
The 3CR garage sale, in the 3CR car park at the rear of 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy. Part of the official garage sale trail. Sunday the 16th of November, 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. See you there.
Good morning. It is currently 3CR Thursday Breakfast, and I am joined in the studio by Sueda, who joins us to discuss their latest album, This Is All, released last week, which has been 6 years in the making. It's so masterfully produced and a really dynamic album with really dreamy vocals, and they're a Nam-based electronic musician and producer. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
It's early.
It is early. It is very early. Yeah. Could you tell the listeners a little bit more about your career as a musician?
I don't know. That's a big question. I've been involved in a few different things, but my solo project has kind of evolved throughout time and changed names a few times, transitioning and stuff like that. I've just changed it again to how you say my last name, which is Suda, except that was taken like there were like 10. I was like, yep, let's go. It's going to be Suitor. And then I went on to distribution and was like, okay, there are 10 other suitors. Like,
oh,
when did
gosh.
This happen? So then, yeah, just kind of changed up the spelling a bit.
Yeah, beautiful. What has the project, I know it's been 6 years in the making, what was it like from its inception to what it's like now?
I think that it started as like, it's been like an exploration in sound design and kind of how to then, you know, push that into a pop context, I guess. And yeah, it's just, yeah, I'm not sure how to, I think like a lot of, I have made music for like film and TV and stuff like that, and I'm just really interested in how sound can itself can create like a strong like emotional narrative,
yep.
and how sound can itself can be like relational in that way between like the listener and the creator, and so yeah, I think that the album itself is a lot about communication and reality and stuff, and it all makes sense in my mind that those things would, you know, intertwine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that you've had so much beautiful collaboration on the album, and also you, like as you said, that you want the relationship between yourself as the artist and then also the listener. How do you envision kind of the album kind of taking shape now that it's out there?
Yeah, it's a good question, 'cause people have asked me when live shows are, but the situation is I recorded all the songs before my voice dropped, and I recorded them all, like pitching my voice down a fifth, so that it sounded lower, but didn't sound super low and still like, kind of kept a lot of my vocal tone intact. So I have to learn how to re-sing all of them in my current pitch as my voice is. So I'm not sure how it's gonna like evolve in that way. But I think I'm just excited to be like working on new music and collaborating with people and yeah, just kind of moving on, I guess. Yeah.
No, that's beautiful. I think being able to collaborate with such incredible artists, and I know it's, you know, even listening to it, it's so beautifully mastered and produced. Were there any like surprises along the way when you were collaborating with people, or like inspirations that you were pulling from each other?
Yeah, I didn't. I think like the main person I collaborated, well, I think like, you know, it was mixed and mastered by people, which like I think the, you know, Becky guy and Hamer, like who I was working with, are just all so phenomenal, and like pretty much everything they did I was like, that's, yep, that's incredible, great, let's go. Yeah. Like, but yeah, Naveen Abdulati played trumpet on This Is All, which was actually during lockdowns, and they just happened to be my partner's housemate. And so, yeah, we were like, went into their room and I like lined up all their clothes to like kind of block the sound, and was like, if you could just play into here, and just like, yeah, that was really, they played so beautifully, and
wow,
that was really nice to.
It's like curating a fashion show right in the middle
of
the room.
Yeah.
I know that everybody's been asking you, when are we getting a live show? What has kind of the reception been like? Because, you know, I can imagine that you've been thinking about this for so long, and like kind of zoned in on it, particularly if you're like producing a whole album. Now that it's out there, what has the reception been like? Are you surprised by anything?
Yeah, I think like it's so fresh, you know, like it's been less than a week. So I think, yeah, so far it's been good. But still kind of working on, releasing it out into the world. It feels like it's just kind of like, you know, it's been a bit of like a cowboy release, to be honest, because I was just like, if I don't do this, it's not going to happen. I need to just push it out into the
yep.
world. And
what do you mean by cowboy release?
I mean,
like guerrilla release?
Yeah, I mean, like I haven't had a very good, like, it's been a bit like, kind of just like all, like, I guess I haven't had like a super structured release plan, if I'm honest, like I would normally have. I think because, yeah, I mean, like my relationship to like releasing music and music has changed a lot. And it's interesting to navigate now, I think, because it is so the way that it's that you're meant to release music now, I guess, is so based off like content production and these kinds of things. And, you know, spending time on, to be honest, it's hard to, I want people to hear the music, but it's also like, it's hard to justify spending that amount of time on content production for yeah. something when there's like so many other things in my world and the world that like deserve time, you
yeah,
know,
so absolutely.
It's hard to justify that, but yeah.
But I think, yeah, just, I think the reception that I've seen and everybody's that's been listening to it that I know seems to really enjoy it and love it. And we'll put links in our show notes on how to listen to it as well. But I know, you know, if somebody hasn't listened to your music before or listening to the album, what would you hope that they come into the listening experience with?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, like, just thinking about, I think that people, like, sometimes when they approach music and art can it not be super intentional. So I think, like, being intentional and just thinking about, just, like, listening. But also I think the thing that I love most about that I wanted to create with, like, my exploration of sound design was actually emotion and, like, telling a story or whatever. So I think just, like, yeah, being present in that, and I hope that it you know, moves people in some way or makes them feel seen in some way.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing, beautiful. And where can people follow your work and listen to the album?
So my Instagram, which is still under my old name tag, which is Geryon, Geryon. But I think if you type in Suda, like spelled like pseudonym, so like Pseuda, then it'll come up, and the album is on Bandcamp and SoundCloud, and then will be released on some streaming platforms, not Spotify.
Not Spotify, yep. Yeah,
in a week, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you so much for coming on and really telling us, you know, it's such a passion project, and I'm so glad that it's out in the world and we all get to listen to it.
Cool. Thanks so much for having me, Inez.
Thank you. And that was Suda, who joined me in the studio to talk about their latest album, This Is All, released last week, 6 years in the making. Beautifully produced, dynamic album with dreamy vocals. Take a listen to it.
Do you have a fine you're worried about? If you are struggling to pay a fine, there can be ways to help you deal with it. You may be able to get your fine lifted or reduced where you are experiencing difficult life circumstances, such as family violence, mental health challenges, disability, homelessness, or drug or alcohol dependency. If you have fines from not paying toll roads, you may also be able to get the fine waived if you're experiencing financial or other hardship. Speak to a community lawyer or financial counsellor to get advice on your options. You can find your local community centre on the Federation of Community Legal Centres website, fclc.org.au. You can find a financial counsellor by calling the National Debt Helpline on 1800 007 007. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Don't have $1 million and still want to have a good education for your kid? Tune into the Dogs program. We are the defenders of government schools. 12 p.m. on Saturdays here on 3CR. 855 and AM dial podcast, streaming live on 3cr.org.au and 3CR digital. We defend government schools because they need it.
You're tuned into Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM, and we are now going into our final interview for today with Grace Gooley, Senior Solicitor at the Justice and Equity Centre, who joins us to discuss a racial discrimination case launched in the federal court by two young Aboriginal brothers against the New South Wales Police. The brothers, aged 11 and 13, were subjected to over 150 bail compliance checks by New South Wales Police over a 20-month period, raising serious concerns about the level of police intervention in the lives of Aboriginal children and young people, including in their own homes. Good morning, Grace.
Morning, Priya.
Thanks for joining us. Now, I wanted to ask to start this off with, what are bail compliance checks? And can you tell us about how they're authorised and carried out in New South Wales?
So when people are released on bail, they're usually released with certain conditions in place. So really common conditions we see are curfew conditions or accommodation conditions. So, for example, you get bail, but you have to live at this address and you have to be at that address between 7 p.m. and 7 a.m. So when police attend people's homes to do bail checks, what they're doing is checking to make sure that people are complying with those conditions. To the part of your question about authorisation, if police want to conduct bail checks, they can approach the court and ask the court to make a special condition that allows them to do these checks. The problem that we're seeing is that police are very frequently, almost routinely, doing these checks without that court authorisation. And when police avoid this process, they end up deciding for themselves who to check and when to check them. And what we see then is that kids are being checked multiple times a night, often after midnight, and most concerningly, that Aboriginal children are being checked at much higher rates than non-Aboriginal children.
Yeah. And do you have concerns about the legality of the unauthorised checks themselves, or is it mainly about the disproportionate targeting?
We have concerns about both, and we do actually have two separate cases on foot in the Supreme Court, which are trespass cases, and we've brought those cases because we believe that, the discriminatory element aside, the checks that are done without court authorisation actually amount to trespass.
Yeah, thank you very much for clarifying that, because I think that is a really important complement to the conversation that we're having about discriminatory targeting. And so I wanted to turn to the expert report that the Justice and Equity Centre commissioned earlier this year, which revealed the grossly disproportionate application of bail compliance checks on Aboriginal children and young people. So briefly, can you tell us why you commissioned that report and what that data shows?
Sure. So it was the experience of our clients that prompted us obtaining this report. So for these clients, what we observed was an excessive amount of checks that didn't at all reflect these kids' criminal histories or levels of risk. So alarm bells went off, and we decided to get a clearer picture of what was happening across the state by digging into the data. Now, we obviously can't speak the intention of particular police officers, but what the data demonstrates is that police are checking Aboriginal young people on bail at much higher rates than non-Aboriginal young people. So Aboriginal young people were subject to 42% more checks on average than non-Aboriginal young people. And then when you look at the kids that are being targeted in the most extreme way, the data shows that Aboriginal kids are twice as likely to be targeted with very frequent checks, and that nearly one in eight Aboriginal young people were checked 12 or more times in a month, compared to around one in 20 non-Aboriginal young people. And that was really what our clients experienced, that very extreme level of checking. So during some months, they were checked up to 20 times a month, and on quite a few occasions, they were checked multiple times a night.
Yeah, that's extremely concerning, especially bearing in mind that there is a challenge about the legality of the checks themselves as well. And so to combine that with the intensity of targeting, especially of young Aboriginal people, is incredibly concerning. And so the Justice and Equity Centre is currently supporting two Aboriginal brothers aged 11 and 13 who've been subjected to an intense rate of home checks by New South Wales Police. And I understand this process has been ongoing for a while. It was before the Australian Human Rights Commission, but it's now progressed to the federal court. Can you tell us about these brothers' case?
Yeah, sure. So just to clarify, these brothers were 11 and 13 when the checks started, so they are now a bit older. But yes, when the checks started, they were very, very young children. And these were kids that really didn't have a serious history of offending when the checks started up. They were on bail for their first offence that had ever been before a court, and it was a pretty minor offence. Once they were released on bail, the checks kicked off, and from that time, over a 20-month period, they were subject to more than 150 bail checks by police. When looking at the nature of these checks and what these kids actually experienced, it's really important to highlight that these checks aren't applied to knock at the door at 6 p.m. What we're seeing is police coming well after midnight into the early hours of the morning. If the front door isn't answered immediately, police are banging on windows, they're shining torches through bedroom windows. There were a few occasions on which they let themselves in around the side gate and banged on doors at the back of the house. It's a single mother living there with her three sons. The youngest son, I think, was 8 or 9 at the time. Mm. And it was terrifying for this family. And it's this kind of really heavy-handed, disruptive policing that has absolutely devastating consequences for families who end up really just not feeling safe in their own homes anymore.
Yeah, I can imagine how traumatizing it is to be subjected to what are effectively arbitrary checks where, you know, the family has no knowledge that this is coming. It happens very late in the night into the early hours of the morning. And, you know, these are young children as well. I mean, it shouldn't really matter what age the people are, but especially given that they're young children, you know, the disruptive nature and the fear that this must cultivate in the family is really serious. What role do you see strategic litigation playing in addressing issues of systemic racial discrimination, particularly when it comes to policing, if we're thinking about the broader context that these checks are occurring within?
Yeah, I think because strategic litigation does attract so much attention, it does play a really important role in promoting greater transparency and accountability around discriminatory policing practices like this. It is this sort of discriminatory policing that is a key driver of the over-incarceration of First Nations communities. And it's this policing that is resulting in the ongoing cycles of criminalisation. So it's so important that we call it out. The other really important aspect of this case is that if it is successful, it will be the first case where an Australian court makes findings of racial discrimination based on statistical evidence. So if it's successful, it could provide a template and pave the way for further claims to be brought. And it would certainly mean that police would need to start thinking pretty seriously about what needs to change so that they can avoid that level of liability.
Yeah, and I can imagine that it is it's no mean feat to be successful in this kind of litigation. I think about the work of people like Dr. Tamara Hopkins in Victoria and the Racial Profiling Data Monitoring Project. And I just wanted to ask one follow-up question there about some of the challenges that you might face going forward.
Yeah, I mean, litigation can be extremely protracted. You are playing a long game. That takes its toll on the client. And it's inherently risky. Like, we don't know what approach police are going to take to these claims. We don't know what evidence they're going to be able to put on. Litigation does definitely present a multitude of challenges. You're right to point to Tamar's work. She's been an absolute trailblazer in this space, and we very much look to the work that she did with the Hail Michael case when we were putting this claim together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is an immense amount of work, but also really worth doing. And just to close off, what's next for the case and what should people be looking out for as they follow this process?
Well, it's now over to police to file a defence to the claim. So they've ordinarily got about 28 days to do that. They may require longer. Once pleadings have closed, it's then on to evidence. As the case progresses, we'll provide updates from our end where we can.
Yeah, of course. And we'll be keeping an eye on this, and perhaps we'll have you on again in the future. But for now, Grace, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Priya.
And that was Grace Gooley, Senior Solicitor at the Justice and Equity Centre, who joined us to talk about a racial discrimination case launched in the federal court by two young Aboriginal brothers against the New South Wales Police. Now, the brothers, who were aged 11 and 13 at the time, were subjected to over 150 bail compliance checks by New South Wales Police over a 20-month period, which has raised serious concerns about the level of police intervention in the lives of Aboriginal children and young people, including in their own homes. And as Grace mentioned, there are parallel cases going on in the federal court challenging trespass in relation to police's arbitrary entry of personal premises of the homes of people to undergo these compliance checks, or to undertake rather these compliance checks, really challenging, apart from the discriminatory targeting, the actual authorization of police to undertake checks like this. This is a really concerning development, and I think it's worth thinking about in relationship to the adult time for adult crime laws that the Victorian Allan government has put in to or introduced to Parliament rather this week. There has been a real increase in targeting of children and young people, whether formally authorized in law or through the increase of police intervention into young people's lives around so-called Australia. And so this is an area that we need to continue scrutinizing to ensure that all children and young people can grow up safe, healthy in their communities, connected and supported, rather than being subjected to intense police surveillance and scrutiny. You're listening to Thursday Morning Breakfast on 3CR 855 AM. 3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings. Cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au. You're tuned in to Thursday Morning Breakfast, and we are just about to wrap up our show. A quick reminder before we give you our rundown for what we covered today, but Defend Dissent Coalition will be holding a rally against the punitive anti-protest laws introduced by the Allan Labor government into Parliament next week. And that'll be outside Parliament House next Tuesday, the 18th of November at 5:30 p.m. Now, we heard today some speeches from the Rally for Sudan on Sunday, the 9th of November at the State Library of Victoria.
And after that, we had an interview with Jorgen from Partway for Palestine about closing Pine Gap. Then Oscar joined us in the studio to talk about Footscray Community Response and an upcoming protest this Saturday in Nicholson Street Mall at 11 a.m. And then we had Suda, an electronic musician, joining us in studio to discuss their recent release, This Is All, 6 years in the making.
And finally, as you just heard, we were joined by Grace Gooley from the Justice and Equity Centre to talk about a racial discrimination case launched in the federal court challenging New South Wales Police exercise of bail compliance checks. And a really important thing to continue watching. And finally, we want to remind you again to get in contact with Yarra City councillors about this really alarming motion that was put forward last night to close the medically supervised injecting room in Richmond. So if you can head to yarracity.vic.gov.au and send through an email to Yarra City councillors before 10:30 a.m. urging them to reverse that motion and to keep the medically supervised injecting room open. I'm sure a lot of people would really appreciate it. This is a vital service, as Inez spoke about earlier today. Again, head to yarracity.vic.gov.au. That's all we've got time for today, but we hope that you enjoy your day. Stay radical, everyone, and we will catch you next week on Thursday Breakfast. Bye.
See ya.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find NIBS opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall, Carlton. Keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.